Jurek Lewandowski, who's going to speak about when non-expanding horizons met near-horizon geometries. Jurek?
Thank you. Good morning in the US and good afternoon in Europe. I will tell you about a joint work with Adam Szereszewski and Piotr Waluk from my university. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a peculiar solution to Einstein's equations was constructed. Three brave Jedi Knights wrote a paper in which they investigated space-time foliated by the healing horizon. Okay, next slide. Okay, so now I will tell you, just as an introduction to this talk, what this solution was constructed from without any explanation, and then the rest of the talk will be the derivation of the solution and new results. So now we are on slide number 3. The ingredients of this solution are a two-dimensional sphere equipped with a metric tensor and a one-form, and the metric tensor and one-form are subject to the equation, which is on the bottom, in the bottom of the slide. Actually, this equation is quite important in theory of black hole horizons. So I here included references to papers in which this equation was studied and existence of solutions and solutions were derived. From those ingredients, on the next transparency, number 4, we construct the solution as follows. So space-time is obtained by taking two copies of R and cross-product with the sphere. In this four-dimensional space, we introduce coordinates X, A, which are coordinates coming from the sphere, and two more coordinates, U and Z. And in terms of those four coordinates, we introduce the metric tensor written below. Notice that the first term in this metric tensor is just the metric tensor which was defined on the sphere. And the dependence of variables U and V is everywhere explicit. So if you don't see any dependence on U and V, it means there is no dependence. So the rest of the metric is defined in terms of the one-form omega and in terms of the metric tensor, which is contained in divergence of omega, which is divergence with respect to this metric tensor, and in omega squared, which is square of a covector. So we use the two-dimensional metric to take this square. And the resulting metric satisfies the vacuum Einstein equation. Okay, so as I said, it was a long time ago, and now I will tell you about the derivation, about generalization of this result in from present perspective. Let us go on to slide number 5 and to slide number 6. Okay, so these days everything is not any longer four-dimensional, it is n-dimensional, where n is arbitrary, bigger or equal than 3. Let me first recall definition of the main tools of the talk, which are non-expanding and isolated horizon. So non-expanding horizon is a codimension 1 null surface, which is non-expanding, and which has compact space-like section. This surface is submanifold in space-time. About space-time, we assume it is n-dimensional. It is equipped with a space-time metric tensor of signature minus, plus, and dimension is bigger than equal 3. We also satisfy the Einstein equation. We also assume the Einstein equations, but in very, very general form with arbitrary stress-energy tensor, which is assumed to satisfy only some well-known energy conditions, and actually those energy conditions we assume only at this point of the horizon. So L is a null vector field tangent to the horizon, and T contracted with the vector field is subject to those inequalities. So this is our scenario. There is the space-time, and we consider subsurfaces in this space-time. Now, let's move on to transparency number 7. So whenever you consider null surfaces, it's always convenient to use Reich-Chahuri equation. This equation is very well known in four dimensions. So we, for our usage, also generalize this to n dimensions. So this equation is, which I wrote here, is satisfied by expansion theta and shear sigma of any null vector field which is tangent to a null surface. And now you can see that if we assume that the surface is non-expanding, it is non-expanding horizon, this it amounts to assuming that theta is zero. And actually, from the right hand, from this equation, we obtain that not only the right hand side is zero, but actually each of the remaining two terms individually is zero. So from this we obtain the vanishing of shear, and since shear and expansion are the only two ingredients of changes in metric tensor when we use the null flow, then it is equivalent to saying that the null vector field is the metric tensor, the degenerate metric tensor on the surface is Lie-Bragg by this null vector field. Okay, so it opens the possibility to define on the next slide, number 8, geometry of a non-expanding horizon. So let me remind you that this non-expanding horizon is living in a space-time which has space-time metric g mu nu and space-time covariant derivative nabla nu. And here I will be using the following index notation, that indices corresponding to the full space will be denoted by mu nu. Indices corresponding to a codimension 1 surface will be denoted by lowercase ab. And indices corresponding to n minus 2 surfaces will be denoted by capital A, capital B. The intrinsic, so the metric tensor, space-time metric tensor, induces a degenerate metric on the horizon. And this is this additional interest which we have from our assumptions. Also, the covariant derivative induces a covariant derivative on this surface. So we consider horizon geometry to be the pair consisting of this induced metric tensor and induced covariant derivative. The induced covariant derivative is not any more determined by the metric tensor. It has more components. And one of those extra components of this covariant derivative is rotation potential. It is given by certain identity, which by the fact that the null directions are covariantly constant. And the coefficient gives a coefficient of rotation potential. I call it rotation potential because, in fact, omega is not uniquely defined. It is when we rescale a null vector, then there is some additive. There is some term which we have to add. However, the anti-symmetrized derivative of omega is invariant, and actually it's a measure of rotation of horizon. The contraction of this rotation potential with the null vector field it corresponds to is also a very important coefficient. It's called surface gravity. Non-expanding horizon is subject to constraints which follow from Einstein equations. Usually, Einstein equations have on the right hand side have mu nu. However, because of several assumptions which we made here, and because of those energy inequalities, in some cases, in some constraints, T mu nu vanishes because the corresponding coefficients are just identically zero. So there is the last equation on this transparency relates the gradient of surface gravity with the lead derivative of the rotation potential along the null direction. And it's telling us that one equals the other. And in particular, we use it in the following way, that if from some symmetry, it follows that rotation one form potential is actually constant along the null direction, then it implies that surface gravity is constant along all the n minus one dimensional surface. And vice versa, if we choose L such that surface gravity is constant, then we can conclude from this that the corresponding one-form potential will be dragged by the corresponding null vector. So this is brief discussion of the non-expanding horizon geometry. Let's go to the next slide, number 9. Non-expanding horizon may or may not have symmetry. By symmetry, we consider a vector field whose lead derivative preserves the induced metric tensor and preserves, in the sense of commutator, commutes with covariant derivative. In a general case, there are no natural symmetry. However, some special cases, special horizons, may admit symmetry. So, for example, there is a class of non-expanding horizons which admit a null symmetry. It means we can choose this null vector tangent to horizon in such a way that it not only drags the metric tensor, but it also commutes with the covariant derivative. Then, if such choice exists, then we call non-expanding horizon isolated horizon. So this isolated horizon is yet closer to the Killing horizon than non-expanding horizon, because it's not only one-dimensional metric tensor is, or the degenerate metric tensor is an invariant with respect to the null direction, but also the covariant derivative. So now you can recall what I was telling you about the Zeroth law, which was on the previous slide. In this case, the symmetry implies that the rotation one form is lead-dragged by L. So, in the consequence of this constraint, we conclude that surface gravity is constant along all the three-dimensional surface of isolated horizon. Let's go to the next transparency. There is yet more special case, namely when we have isolated horizon, as in the previous transparency, and when this isolated horizon, the surface gravity of this isolated horizon vanishes. Notice that if surface gravity is zero, then we cannot easily change this fact. If we rescale, so this symmetry of isolated horizon is given up to constant factors, but rescaling by a constant factor will not change the vanishing of the gravitational constant. So this is a well-defined notion. Once we have distinguished one-dimensional group of null symmetries of isolated horizon. Now, as I was mentioning before, non-expanding horizons and isolated horizons satisfy some constraints, which just come from geometric identities, which relate space-time Ricci scalar, which is RAD, the rightmost RAD, with the data defined on the horizon. In this case, This constraint is actually defined on every slice, the space-like slice of the horizon. So if we choose any, it's depicted by orange and denoted by H. If we choose any slice, space-like slice of the horizon, then this slice is endowed with N minus, with metric tensor GAD, which actually now is genuine proper metric tensor. It's also endowed with pullback of the rotation one form potential, omega A. The metric tensor defines the corresponding covariant derivative, which is also denoted by nabla, but it has this sign N minus 2 to remind us that this is not the space-time covariant derivative, but just this derivative corresponding to this metric. And there is the corresponding N minus 2 Ricci tensor, which is the Ricci tensor, intrinsic Ricci tensor of this N minus 2 metric. And then, so those data are subject to the constraint which I wrote here. And now if you remember my first, or maybe literally it was on the third transparency, this constraint is very similar to that equation which was used to construct that strange metric tensor. If we assume that T mu nu is zero and N equals two and H is a two sphere, then we obtain the same equation which I already referred to. And this is the general version which is true for arbitrary dimension and isolated horizons of arbitrary shape. This constraint is also, using this constraint, we can also formulate opposite condition, which allows us to guess that given a non-expanding horizon, that actually there exists, a symmetry, a null symmetry. So this condition is, this inverse theorem is telling us more or less that if we have a non-expanding horizon about which we don't know whether it is isolated or not, however, there is a slice and there is a choice of this null vector L such that this constraint happens to be satisfied, then if in addition we know this equation which is just on the very, very bottom, which is if we happen to know that the Ricci, space-time Ricci tensor is de-dragged by null vectors, by null directions. For example, it is true in the vacuum case or in case with cosmological constant, then we have it automatically. But so if we have this extra information, then we can conclude that this non-expanding horizon actually is isolated horizon with certain suitably chosen null vector. So let's move to the next transparency. Here I outlined the papers from which I have my knowledge about the isolated and non-expanding horizons. And the last paper is yet to appear, will be showing you results from this paper. Okay, let us move to transparency number 12. And now, usually when we think about non-expanding or isolated horizons, we tend to think that they surround black holes, so that there are some very special surfaces, unique surfaces in a given space-time. So here is the idea. What if actually it was opposite? What if there was a space-time which is foliated by non-expanding horizons? Okay, so suppose this is the case. Suppose that space-time is foliated by non-expanding horizons. And let us see whether or not this is possible. So now we will be assuming that space-time admits not only one non-expanding horizon, but actually that it admits a foliation like depicted on this picture. Let us move to transparency number 13. So now I spelled out more explicitly the assumption. Suppose space-time is foliated by non-expanding horizons. And suppose that we define some function u which is constant on each non-expanding horizon. So actually, in this case, there is a distinguished choice for null vector field, at least at each of the horizons, namely this vector field given by the gradient of the function u. Actually, it can be only rescaled by a constant which depends on horizon. So on every horizon, it is determined uniquely up to constant rescaling. So it's quite good compared to the ambiguity which we usually have. Okay, so now what we should do is we should calculate the Ricci tensor of spacetime. And now it turns out that the geometry of this horizon and the geometry defined on a n-2 dimensional slice of each of the horizons satisfies the following constraint, this long equation. So this constraint is again on similar data as subject to this constraint is similar data as before. So elements of this constraint are metric tensor induced on n-2 dimensional slice, the rotation one from potential, the covariant derivative and the Ricci scalar of the n-2 metric, as well as the Ricci scalar of the space metric. And this equation looks somewhat similar to the external horizon constraint. Let's move to transparency number 14. So here, let us compare the two conditions. Here is the first equation is copied from the previous transparency. So this is this condition which I just told you about, which is satisfied due to existence of foliation, while the extremal horizon condition is the second. So you can see they look very similar. And actually, when we were working on this a long time ago, and Tomasz Pawłowski was a PhD student and he derived this first equation, I told him immediately that I know this equation, but he made a small mistake and he should go back home and correct the sign. However, he came back after a few days and he told me that I'm wrong and his signs are correct. And that apparently it is true that the constraint is not anymore the extremal horizon constraint. However, it's related to the extremal horizon constraint by very simple transformation, omega L equals minus omega L prime. So if we do this transformation, then we map one equation into another. But what could cause such transformation? We don't have any natural source of any natural need for such transformation. So what could be behind, what could produce such transformation? Okay, let's go to transparency number 15. Consider intersecting non-expanding horizons. Okay, so now we have two horizons. One is H and another one is N and another is N prime. And they intersect at n-2 dimensional surface H. Now this H is a slice, a space-like slice of both the unprimed horizon as well as the prime horizon. Okay, so suppose that we normalize the null vectors L, which is defined on unprimed horizon, and L prime, which is defined on the prime horizon, in such a way that the scalar product is minus one on the intersection, because otherwise they don't see each other. But suppose that at this intersection H, everywhere they satisfy this normalization condition. Okay, then when we go back to the definition of the rotation one form potential, and also we realize that since this surface H is contained both in N and in N prime, it can be endowed with the pullback of unprimed rotation potential as well as with the pullback of primed rotation one from potential. So are they related in any way? So they are related in very trivial way, and there is very simple calculation showing this. Namely, one rotation potential equals minus the other one. So this is exactly the transformation we were looking for. Okay, so now we can rethink our earlier result. What does our earlier result mean? Our result means that if we have a foliation, if spacetime is foliated by non-expanding horizon, then each of the horizons satisfies certain constraints. And if there exists a transversal non-expanding horizon, then due to that constraint and due to this this equation, this transversal horizon will be an isolated horizon and extremal isolated horizon. So, however, we don't know whether such surface exists, and actually, in general case, perhaps it doesn't. So that condition is only sort of indication for this surface to exist. Okay, but it doesn't guarantee existence. It only shows that our environment is friendly, a priori friendly for such transversal and extremal isolated horizon. Okay, so let us use this hint, and let's go to transparency number 16. So let us now assume that our spacetime is not only foliated by non-expanding horizons, but that there exists also this orange transversal, one more extra horizon, non-expanding horizon, which is transversal. Okay? So now, let's go to the next transparency. Okay, so now conclude what we learned from our findings, from our results. So we learned the following. Suppose spacetime is created by non-expanding horizon. Suppose there exists a transversal non-expanding horizon. Then the transversal horizon is extreme. And just a side remark, this is here we will be assuming vacuum to solve equations, because it's difficult. In order to solve equations, it's good to assume something about the new. However, this conclusion is also true in case of a present non-zero cosmological constant, because then also the condition I was formulated earlier would be satisfied. Okay. Now the second observation that we can make is the following. Suppose we have two intersecting non-expanding horizons. So actually they form a Cauchy surface. And now data which is necessary to reconstruct spacetime from two null surfaces usually consists of data defined on their intersection plus shear defined on one of the surfaces, shear defined on the other of the surfaces, and also expansion defined on this intersection. But in this case, we know that all the expansions and all the shears are zero. So the only data are the data which we have been using all the time, namely the metric tensor which is induced on this n-2 dimensional intersection. And I'm sorry, here I added one more index by mistake to omega. So omega should have only one index. This is our omega from the previous transparency. So the pullback of one form potential and metric to this n-2 dimensional intersection between two expanding horizons is the data sufficient to calculate all the derivatives of metric tensor, spacetime metric tensor at the Cauchy surface and to reconstruct all spacetime. Okay, so it means that this data, that there is only this unique solution to this, to corresponding to this data. Okay, So if we find an example of solution corresponding to this data, then it will mean that actually we solve the problem of such solutions, that we found all the solutions. So all we have to do is to find an example of solution. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. Okay, so a general solution now in n dimensions rather than in four dimensions looks similar to the introductory transparency. There is again a small mistake in the first line. So given n minus two dimensional manifold H, which will in future be a slice of the horizon, given a metric tensor on H and the one form, metric tensor GAB and one form omega A, and given G and omega such that they satisfy the following equation. So we have symmetrized covariant derivatives of omega plus 2 omega A to omega B minus the Ricci tensor of the n minus 2 metric tensor equals 0. So suppose that this data satisfies this equation. Then, as space-time, we take H cross product R, and we introduce coordinates x which coordinates h and extra two u and v coming from the two r factors, and we define a metric tensor which is completely determined by the n minus two dimensional geometry and by the rotation one form potential. So the first term of this metric is just the metric on H, and then in the second term we can see coefficients which are given by omega and which are given by divergence of omega calculated from this by using this n minus two metric tensor and omega squared, and the metric is independent on u. There is no function here which would depend on u. And the dependence of B is explicitly given by this linear term, linear in B and quadratic. This is it. And the statement is that this metric tensor satisfies the vacuum Einstein equation, Hermitian equals zero. And in the next transparency, I will tell you what is the relation of this metric tensor with our horizon, which we define. So actually, this metric tensor has killing vectors. And one killing vector is d upon du. So this killing vector is, this is obvious. It is here because, as I said, components don't depend on u. So it was manifestly given from the beginning. The second killing vector is a little tricky, but you can see it is really here if you work it out. So it is psi equals d upon dv and minus u upon u d upon du. And those two killing vectors, they span two-dimensional space of killing vectors. So in particular, we can consider combinations of the form u0 times first killing vector plus psi. So for such combination, you can check that this there exists a killing horizon, which is defined by two intersecting surfaces. One surface is given by equation u equal u0, and the second is equal given by v equals 0. So this or means that a point belongs to this horizon if it satisfies either the first equation or the second equation. So, and now when we change, so the surfaces u equal u0 are those horizons which we were thinking about when we were defining foliation. When u0 changes, then we change non-expanding horizons for creating space-time. And now as a here, actually, it's not a bonus, because we actually, as I said, we assume that there exists this extremal horizon. So this extremal isolated horizon will be horizon of the second healing vector, or the, here it was the first one, of the vector field K. So the vector field, the healing vector K also has healing horizon, which is the surface V equals zero. And this horizon actually is isolated extremal horizon. So these are the symmetries. And if you calculate on intersection of this horizon V equal to zero with any of the horizons U equal U zero, if you calculate the induced metric tensor and induced omega, then you will see that they satisfy this equation which we used as at the beginning to construct this solution, and they also coincide with induced metric tensor and induced rotation one from potential. So indeed, they satisfy this Cauchy data. They give the Cauchy data of this form which I discussed in the previous transparency. So this solution gives us to each Cauchy data prescribed in the previous transparency, we have one solution of this form. So it shows that there exists, and this is the only solution which would satisfy those properties. Okay, so this was the higher dimensional generalization of this old result. And now, I've been talking thus far only about horizons, only about non-expanding horizons, isolated horizons. And in the title, I suggested that those horizons are going to meet a near horizon geometry. So let us remind what near horizon geometry. So let's go to the next transparency. Consider an extremal Keeling horizon. So extremal Keeling horizon is a notion usually better known than isolated horizon, but on the other hand, since you are here educated by me, for you now isolated horizon is more common. So let me tell you that Keeling horizon is an isolated horizon which has this property that this null vector field can be extended from symmetry of horizon to symmetry of all the neighborhoods of the horizon. Okay, so suppose that we have an extremal Keeling horizon, and that it is defined by equation V equals zero, then you can choose coordinates in the neighborhood of this horizon such that the metric tensor takes this form which you see here. This form is similar to the previously used form. However, there are some differences. Namely, the first term is again n minus 2 metric tensor. However, now the dependence on coordinates is explicitly emphasized. It's emphasized that this metric depends not only on x, but it also depends on v. And in this, and so is the right, the second term. We have here some general one from WA and function h, but they, in the previous case, they would be v independent, and in this case, they are. There is some arbitrary dependence on V. But what is so special about this metric tensor, and what made people define the notion of new horizon geometry, is that we can, if we apply transformation which maps V to epsilon times V, and U to U divided by epsilon, then this metric tensor admits the coefficients of this metric tensor admit limits to such transformation. Of course, the transformations are acting not only on coefficients, they are also acting on differentials and du and dv. But if you if we take into account all the keep track of all the factors, we will see that actually this limit amounts to in substituting zero for v everywhere where v was just unknown, where dependence on v was unknown, while maintaining v wherever v was explicit. So in the linear term and the quadratic term, this factor v and v squared survive. However, the dependence of function gab on v, the dependence of w on v, and the dependence of h on v disappear due to this limit. V just gets replaced by v. Okay? So why people came up with this limit? So this limit preserves the property of being solution to Einstein equations. So if we choose already known solution to Einstein equations, then after taking this limit, we'll obtain another solution to Einstein equations, perhaps unknown. So this observation made Horowitz in 1999 apply this limit and obtain new solutions from extremal Kerr metric. So we can take Kerr metric, it has extremal Killing horizon, and then we can apply this limit, and we obtain a new metric. Later, this mechanism was generalized to other metrics and other circumstances. And finally, these days, as we learn from paper by Kunduri and Lucetti, actually, metrics which in general has such form as written here with arbitrary functions GAB, WA, and H, such metric is considered a new horizon geometry. So you can see by comparing this metric to the metric which we derived before, that our metric is also a new horizon geometry. And one could even formulate a stronger relation, namely, if we take a near horizon geometry like as the one written here and impose vacuum Einstein equations, then we will obtain exactly the solution which I showed you before. And actually, these days, this fact is well known, so those baselines which I derived for you are known in literature on new horizon geometry, and they are derived in the same way by imposing Einstein, but just from different motivations, just starting. So they are derived in a different way, but they are not derived from assumptions of the existence of foliation, but they are just derived from this formula. Okay, so let's move to transparency number 21. So let us summarize slowly what was and new in those results which I showed you. So we investigated n-dimensional spacetime foliated by non-expanding horizons. We found that each horizon belonging to the foliation satisfies a constraint which is in some sense dual to the extremal isolated horizon constraint. So having such a horizon, we can actually construct an extremal horizon, perhaps living in some other spacetime. But this is what we can really exactly do. From any of the leaves of this foliation, we can construct an extremal isolated horizon, which may be not existing in this spacetime, but certainly which can exist in some other space. Okay. Secondly, we understood that the duality between the two horizons can be geometrically interpreted as coming from intersection between two horizons. So it can be interpreted as condition, as some necessary condition which allows is not sufficient, but allows the existence of transversal extremal horizons. Okay, so that led us to making stronger assumptions. We assumed that space-time admits foliation of non-expanding horizons, and that there exists also a transversal horizon. Okay, then we conclude that this horizon is extremal, and actually what we did, we solved vacuum Einstein equations completely. We derived all the possible solutions to Einstein equations which satisfy the assumption. Okay, so this is something. We assumed something, and then we found general solutions to those assumptions. Our general solution turned out to be also a general solution to the equations of near horizon geometry. So it turned out to be otherwise known these days, near horizon geometry. Okay, let's go to transparency number 22. And now the results which I brought up at the beginning of the talk actually came from n equal 4 dimensional case. They were derived long time ago. But actually this was the same result. In this old paper we considered four-dimensional spacetime and foliation by non-expanding horizons. And then we derived that spacetime, which today is very well known as near horizon geometry, but those days it was sort of less known. I mean, there were known examples of such solutions, but I don't think that this general form was known. So certainly this was one of the early links between the two theories of non-expanding horizons on one hand and or isolated horizons and of new horizon geometry. So I just checked in two big leading reviews on the subject whether our result actually is also in the intersection of those leading reviews. So I found our paper mentioned in leading reviews on isolated horizons. However, it is mentioned only in parentheses as a footnote as another exotic case. On the other hand, it's completely not known in the leading review on near horizon geometry. So I conclude that it's worth pointing out this result. Okay, but now what are actually open questions and what are those new results and what is that we don't have? So the first question is that, as I said, we completely solved the problem of space-time foliated by non-expanding horizons and one transversal, and which admits a transversal horizon. Okay. So, but what about this more general case when space-time is just foliated by non-expanding horizons? So we don't know at this point whether there are more general solutions or not. It seems they are. There is a class of solutions which is called Kunz class, and in four dimensions at least it's called Kunz class. However, if you want to find our solutions, or if you want to find some new solutions in this class, then you're going to find that actually those solutions which are looking for belong to a subclass which is not so well known. So the only solutions which are known are actually those which we also know, which are the Kerr extremal horizon. The second question maybe is more specific. Maybe it refers to actually the first result. So our construction of those exact solutions which we derive relies on unknown solution to certain master equations. So this is this equation which in four-dimensional case was already on the third transparency, and later it was shown as in the construction of those vacuum solutions as extremal isolated horizon condition in vacuum. So even in this easiest four-dimensional case, we don't know how many solutions this equation has. What we know is the following. We know that if we assume axisymmetric case, then the only solutions are those defined by the extremal curve. So we even consider this result as a sort of uniqueness theorem for non-expanding horizon, for extremal non-expanding horizon. However, does this equation have non-asymmetric solutions? That we don't know. There is a conjecture that maybe every solution has to have axial symmetry, but this solution, I remember Paul Pott had some plausible arguments, but it was never proven. We also know that it doesn't have a rotation, non-rotating solutions, meaning non-rotating case is when omega is non-zero, but its exterior derivative is zero. So we don't know if it, we know that it doesn't have non-rotating solution. But if you find a non-axisymmetric solution to this equation, then you have a new exact solution to the Einstein equation. So this is this optimistic conclusion for our future research. Let's move to transparency number 23. Thank you very much for attention.
Questions?
Jurek, this is Abhay. So can we go to your slide number 13?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just confused about the notation, and some other people might be confused also. So here, each U equal to constant surface is an isolated, is a non-expanding horizon, right?
Yes.
And you define L prime there. And then you've got a bottom equation. And that equation, you really have L and not L prime. Is that right? Because
Yes. It is L prime. I'm sorry. I just changed notation.
Thank you. Sure. And then let's go to the next page. Just because I think I know what the answer is, but I'm not 100% sure, and other people will be confused. And if you go to the next page,
right,
so there also both these equations are with L, and so one of them is supposed to be with L prime, is that right?
Yes, the first one comes from the previous transparency, so now it's with L prime.
And the second one, yeah, good, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
More questions? Okay, I guess it was very clear, so let's thank Jurek again.
Okay.